You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's The Newsroom After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's The Newsroom After Show.
Hello, everyone. Bing is for doing, and we are here doing another amazing after show for The Newsroom. We are in Season 2, Episode 8, Election Night, Part 1. I am your host, Kelly, and with me is...
John Comerford.
And we've got
Tamara Berg filling in for Sarah Mendoza, who's out this week.
And we have a very special guest in the house with us, taking over, filling in for Kristen tonight.
taking over.
You can say taking over.
Yeah. Chris Chalk, who you know as Greg.
Gary Cooper.
Oh my gosh.
And he will be taking over. We're sure of that. So we're going to be stepping out very shortly.
I know. So this was an amazing episode. Lots of great stuff going on.
It's very exciting. I mean, this is almost better than watching real election nights because we get all the other stuff with it.
We get to see the behind the scenes.
Oh, I know. I was really excited when they did the, when they start cutting in, they're going to go do the coverage and the whole thing with Charlie setting up the, getting the forces together. We got 3 minutes. And it was just exciting.
No, I loved every part of it. It was really good. And I liked seeing the girls on the panel and how they were heckling Elliot and being in the green room. And that was pretty funny. And it's just like a lot of good banter and a lot of good chemistry on the show tonight. And I like that Jim and Hallie are still together and that's still kind of playing out.
Hallie, a.k.a. Meryl Streep.
A.k.a. Meryl Streep.
I can't see anything but Meryl Streep when I see her.
You know when I think the show, as a fan of the show, yeah. I think yeah. the show is the best in episodes like this,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're past all the clues and the sarin gas and now everything's urgent. Yeah. Everything gets settled. And that dude, Aaron Sorkin is like the greatest juggler of all time.
No kidding.
Because he had 45 balls in the air this episode and there was not a pause.
Yeah.
It was just efficient writing. Just efficient.
I love watching Aaron Sorkin shows so much, but a lot of the times I have to not watch them and just listen to them because there's so much information going on.
I was doing
that a lot tonight. I was looking at the floor and just listening and writing notes just to make sure that I was getting it on. And then I go back and watch it a second time.
And then you're like, oh, I get it now.
Oh, I totally missed that facial expression. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Well, I mean, speaking to that point, there's so much going on. And you had mentioned earlier that you weren't exactly sure you remembered it all.
It's true. And then you watch it and you're like, now you see why I couldn't remember it all.
Exactly.
That's everything's going on.
Yeah, there's so much happening.
But I swear, it's the best when you have the full ensemble. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had, what was that, like 30 characters in this episode.
Yeah.
And everybody had something important to say. And who else can do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know? He's really good.
Yeah. And I like that there's some really serious stuff going on and then the comic relief that's in there that it just really makes you laugh and the way that the characters talk. And even though they have the way that he writes and these kind of long monologues, there's still a lot of really funny stuff that lightens the mood of it all, even though you know it's like a really serious discussion that they're having. And I just like the flow of it and the way that it kind of goes.
And I wanted to speak to something. Since we have you in studio, I want to ask this. Jason Ensler was the director of this and you have so much information. So how much time do you actually have to get this thing done, because there's so much dialogue and so much stuff.
You mean how much time we have to learn?
Yeah. Is it a week schedule? You do it in a week?
Usually about 8-9 days.
Eight, nine days.
And actually, we're pretty strict with 8-9 days, I got to say. You know.
And how does that fare with, because you've been on Justified. You've been on plenty of other TV shows.
Oh, shows are so different. You never know. You know, Justified, it's a completely different collaborative project.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, Timothy Oliphant runs an incredible, he worked so hard on making the script perfect.
Right.
Whereas Aaron makes the script perfect at home.
Right.
Right.
And when you see it on the page, that's pretty much how it's going to be. This episode, it's never this way, but like, in the part where David Harbour was, Elliot was doing the teleprompter.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. He was like, I didn't know I had to learn this whole thing because you cut away from me. And they're like, no, you're in the background. Uh-huh. So you have to keep going. And so it was the best day because he's tripping over stuff and he never paused. He read the whole thing on the teleprompter and never paused. And at the end of the day, we're all like, okay, you're the man. you're pretty much the man because
nice.
That's the closest you'll get to improvising in, uh-huh. in Aaron's scripts is reading his words from a teleprompter.
Now since you mentioned Oliphant and Justified, how much is improvising there? Because I know they figure out a lot on set. And they say, what about this? What about that?
I don't think it's so much improv as impulse, you know. It's like everybody talks about it. Timothy, he's so generous. He called beforehand and he was like, you know, is there anything you want to get in there? Do you see the character? Is there anything that doesn't ring true to you? And so there's this whole just creative world. Uh-huh. And the newsroom is creative as well.
It's all done beforehand, but
it's done.
Right.
Like, you know your character. You know pretty much how to say it, when to say it, where to say it. Whereas Justify was just so much inspiration and collaboration, which means longer days, but I think they're super inspiring days.
Yeah. That's what I was
loved it.
We had David Meunier here when we were doing the Justified just this last season, and he talked about that a lot too, about the creative process on that set was really, really enjoyable to work with.
It's like ideal, you know, because it's what we get paid to do. We get paid to act and create and collaborate, and so it's really fun when someone's like, "You have an opinion as an actor." You're like, "I do."
I've been waiting for you to ask.
Oh my god, I have so many.
Yeah, right. So on the newsroom, that's a different situation because it's all done ahead of time.
On the newsroom,
you got to hit the mark. You got to say it. You got to get that thing.
Yeah, like Justified is like jeans and a t-shirt. Newsroom is like formal wear. You know what I mean? Like you can relax on Justified and you still look good. You look amazing, and it's still high quality stuff. Newsroom is like you really have to like do as you're told. Which isn't a bad thing.
No.
It's comfortable.
It's highly orchestrated.
Exactly. It's this machine that's very carefully, you know, orchestrated, as you say, and hit this there and.
Yeah, and they know how long they want the episode to be.
Oh, yeah.
So your beat has to be a certain amount. No one sits there and says that. Well, that's not true.
That's the
we've been
the
told
mind.
The beat is too long.
But again,
that's why you end up in episodes like this where you can juggle, you know, 360 characters and all that dialogue and get all this information and still leave, you know. Mm-hmm. Exhausted, but having had fun.
That's why the pacing is so high. That's why we're watching it. We're just going, oh my god.
Yeah, it's when I think he's at his best. I really do. Yeah. I think when he has all these people and he has to think of how to squeeze so much information and still make it all about love. You know what I mean? Because that's what I think the show's about. I don't even care what he thinks. The show's about love.
He's said that on many occasions. It's a romance to, and it's a poetry, an ode, so to speak, to news.
Yeah.
It happens to be in love in all its forms. It just happens to be in the newsroom.
And all the different relationships that go into it. I mean, think about these people that are constantly at this one place all hours of the day and night because of breaking news and all the different schedules and all of that. They don't really get to branch out very much into meeting new and other people. So there's
so of course
be a
they
ton
date
of
each
that.
Other. Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's real life. That's
it's absolutely real life.
Well, in addition to living out all your stress and everything else that's going on in your life through the job.
Yeah. Which is even
the
more
mind
difficult.
Of Aaron Sorkin. Amazing.
So I kind of derailed this a little bit in terms of talking about this episode, so I apologize. So let's get back to that.
Sorry.
No, that's my fault.
No, it's my fault.
I love Justified.
It's
everybody's fault. Okay, come on, people.
Okay, back on track.
Back to the newsroom. Okay, so the election night coverage, we've got two. The discussion between the politics and the candidates and all of that. And I like that at first, Will didn't want to have his personal politics brought up. And then all of a sudden, toward the end, now he wants to, you know, have it, game on. And I like that. I like that he kind of tries to be a little, how do I want to say it? When he talks about personal politics, he doesn't really like to get into it and really make it focused about him. He admits to being a Republican and all of that, but he still likes to keep it open and be kind of nonpartisan.
Well, no news person wants to be the story.
Right.
They don't want to be the story, but now he knows he's going to have to go to after David Petraeus in his personal life, so okay, hit me first.
Yeah.
So then I have room to.
I also, to go back to love, if you see what made him make that decision is he gets lambasted by the woman of his dreams and she's like, all you care about is your personal image. Yeah. And then he goes, you know what? I'm going to prove to her that I like her more than, you know what I mean, my image. And that, you know, again, about love.
And I think that's kind of what he's been doing since, you know, even in season one, even when he was trying to fight it, proving to her that he's not this person, or he wants to be this better person for her. It kind of goes back and forth, but it's all kind of circled around her.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But he still can't get away from the dials and the focus groups and things like that.
No.
I mean, but it's, you know, I don't know, if your whole legacy is built on that.
I mean, that's what I think is great. He's so conflicted about it. Yeah. I mean, on one hand, it's the head and the heart thing. That's what it's always about for them.
And how great was it for Sloane to kind of stick up for him?
Horrible. That was nice. That was horrible.
That was kind of brilliant.
Well, he did talk about a Democrat, but it was a totally not true story.
Made up story. Yeah. Beat.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Wow.
Oh, there's so many of those moments in this episode. So good.
I thought that was great because the flow was really good. They were having the banter and she jumps
and then
in
the train
to
wreck.
Him.
Then the train wreck.
Like, oh, my God.
That should be like, in parentheses, her character name. Sloane Savage. Exactly. The train
wreck.
She's a social train wreck.
She's so good at it.
I love that about her. And even when they're in the green room and they're talking and she wants to jump in the conversation when Maggie comes in to talk to Taylor, and she's like, yes, tell me to, girlfriend. And Elliot's like, stop trying to
You don't need every female friend in the world.
And one of the things I loved about how he writes that character is you can see her heading for the train wreck way before she sees it. And you just keep going. She's not going to hit that. She's not going to collide again.
Is that going to happen?
She did.
Yeah, she's doomed.
Yeah, she was.
Every time. I mean, and the whole book signing thing. I'm going, just let it go. Because nothing good is going to come of that.
And it was all your fault. How did you not know German?
A person just has to help out.
That's right.
Had she done her job in the first place and signed the book, Gary wouldn't have had to help
so
out.
So what was your thinking? What was your thought behind how much German you knew?
Gary Cooper can speak German.
Oh, yeah?
As far as he knows.
He just can't write it.
Yeah, he can't write it. Maybe can't read it. But he can speak a little bit of it. Enough to write.
And
you
what
can shred
was
this
the
book.
Inspiration to even write a German phrase in the first place?
Because a German person bought it.
Yeah.
Bought the book. And it was awesome. That day on set, there was this awesome, I can't remember her name, but in the credits, I'm sure it'll say, there was awesome translator, this young lady who was teaching us how to say it, and me and Dev just
destroyed it, butchered it.
Hours. I mean, you would be surprised at what two people can't do.
Can you do it for us here? Do you remember it?
No. Because it went in and out every single time she said it. And we were like, this is what we get paid for, right? Why can't we not get this right? Like, we locked her in, the room where they were doing the election coverage where David walked in. They literally said, you guys, just go in there with her for a while and just listen.
Right.
Will you just listen to what she's saying?
And you've been on Broadway, right?
Oh, yeah, that's... you think I know how to speak words, having been on Broadway.
Yeah, you've memorized the whole plays with
whole
the
plays,
dialogue.
Whole plays. For some reason, when they're not... Well, that's not true. I've spoken other languages,
too.
There
you
it's
go.
Just that
you
German.
Have no excuse.
Just that
is that
German.
What you're saying?
Yeah. Oh, shameful. Yeah. It's shameful.
Yeah.
Well, it is, it's a hard language. It's not very fun sometimes, depending on what the words are.
What are you saving it for?
No, I like the saving. No, I don't. Saving. That's because I'm replacing someone. You have to be nice.
She ought to keep her job here.
I know. It's like making me all flustered and nervous. I can't. All right. So what about these resignation letters? Everybody still wants to resign. Charlie, Will, Mac definitely wants to get fired. She's feeling the brunt of all of this on her. She feels really guilty.
Yeah.
And for the most part, she's waiting for Will to react.
Yeah, like she said, he's waiting for the bomb to detonate.
So. Yeah, she's waiting for him to punish her, as she calls it, he did for her cheating. Which, that was a very interesting scene for me, just her version of it versus his. Mm-hmm. And I found it very interesting because his was a little bit more, it was much more sensitive than just being mad. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really expect that from his character that much.
But that's kind of where it's been even in season one. Mm-hmm. They were definitely at odds about what the story was between the two of them.
The story of their breaking
and
up.
Love.
And love. It's always about love.
Mm-hmm. It is always about love. And so, it was really interesting to come back to it and see them, bring it up again. And then, you say, see their differing points on it. One of the things that I thought was really interesting about this episode, and maybe it's because I'm not seeing the whole picture yet because it is part one of three, I think. Election Night is three. Oh, it's two. Okay. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the opening where everyone's trying to push and sell their resignations, they're being very cavalier about it, you know, joking about it and, you know, and it's going back and forth. And even Will through the entire thing, I'm the morale. I'm in charge of morale, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, where is that coming from, do you guys think? I mean, is it that he's genuinely terrified and mortified at what happened and is trying to cover it up? Or does he think it's all going to work out?
Oh, I don't think he thinks it's going to work out. In some respects, part of him probably thinks it's a fait accompli. I'm going to have to resign anyway, so this is all window dressing. I'm just going to get through the election. At some point, we're going to have to figure this out. Because I don't think he thinks there's a future for them. I think he believes, like Charlie believes.
That it's going to bring down the network.
Well, he's been very present moment. Like he says to McKenzie, he says, hey, let's deal with what's in the room. Exactly. This is what we can deal with right now.
We can't do it. That'll handle itself because it's going to.
Yeah, we're doomed. We did the wrong thing.
Exactly.
Right.
It's going to happen.
Let's just do the best we can and get out of here with our heads up is what I think. I think that's what everyone's thinking, you know.
Yeah.
But on the inside, it's a time bomb.
You know,
I mean, not him. Obviously, he's the most calm one, but everybody else is literally.
But don't you think underneath that at some point he will explode on?
Yes.
Go crazy.
Absolutely, I think he will.
Do
you?
I don't think so.
I think,
but out of everything that's happened from when McKenzie came back and all that he's dealt with going through season one and into this, and even when we go back to even the start of Genoa and the red teams and all, he didn't really have an opinion about it. He didn't really get into it. He trusted them, and he's taken responsibility now, I think, for that, and just saying, okay, this is what we did. We all decided on it. This was a group effort. We had what we thought were the facts.
And I don't think that's what he's going to be upset about. I think he's still so wounded by what happened between he and Mac that at some point that's going to find its way out. He's doing a great job of holding it in, but at some point I think he is going to go crazy.
I think he's a man with a conscience, and so I don't think that he can just sort of move on to the next thing.
No, and I don't think that, but I think that he's taking responsibility for it. And it's really not something in his mind. Everything that they had was true. They didn't doctor the film. To their knowledge, they thought they were reporting the truth.
Right.
And the top three people all agreed on that. But it wasn't. They didn't. They went back, had to apologize for it. But he's still taking responsibility for it. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that's going to be the worst for him, like you said, is the relationship. Because we even saw that a little bit when he's, you know, emphasizing. I was a good guy. I was a great boyfriend. How dare you think this of me?
Exactly. And how long you've been thinking it? That's why I'm saying that was just a little taste of how wounded he is and how scarred he was by the experience. I think that's much deeper.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you watch the arc from season one to season two, his reaction to this same story, and it's you know, Aaron Sorkin's very good at his job. It's changing. You know, it's like in this episode specifically, it's just like, all right, you get what you want. Usually butting up against the wall. And this one, he was like, you're fired.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you want, you're fired. You know, he is. He's leading the whole team, which Jeff does at work anyway. I mean, like, it's art imitating life.
We should talk more about that.
Yes, we should.
About what? Jeff being the most amazing person ever?
Yeah, what's
Jeff,
it like?
Let me tell you. It's like everybody, let me tell you, I remember our first day getting there. One, I was nervous, but I was very excited because it's a lot of theater people. Like, I think the only people that haven't done theater are Dev and Olivia.
Uh-huh.
And, everyone else has been on Broadway, been nominated for Tonys, won Tonys. And so I was like, oh, these are like my people.
Mm-hmm.
Phew. And then, but it's also people who are very grateful to be at work. And Jeff is first among them. Like, when there are days of like, when he has, you know, 4 or 5 pages. Which doesn't happen in TV. Right. You know, it's like he has 4 or 5 pages and he knows it all. He doesn't, there's never a problem. And that trickles all the way down. There is literally never a problem. You know, if there's a problem, it's because a light went out. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? And it's, I think, you know, when the best people hire the best people, there are very few worries, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the funny thing also about the show, because, you know, down to number 32 on the call sheet, you have people who've been on Broadway and have their own shows but they don't talk a lot. You know what I mean? But it's because they filled the cast with people they trusted to do the job given them. And so, like, you have, Wynn, who booked her own TV show this past season, who doesn't say a whole lot on the show, but she's so good at her job, and they know it, and they trust her, and, you know, and everybody plays their part and knows their part, which is also interesting, because you'd think everybody'd be like, man, this stinks. What am I doing here? I don't ever get to talk. This is boring. But everybody's like, it's all for the greater good, which, again, trickles down from the top, I think. And they hire people that, you know, believe in kind of the common goal of creating and collaborating together, I think.
Whatever.
Boring teamwork. Where's the drama?
Well, what about like guest stars that come in? Like, how does that feel? Is it always very inviting? Does anybody ever have an issue? Is it hard for anyone to learn kind of like the long dialogue because it's different?
I think there's been probably one time where I mean, but it happens to everybody anywhere. Mm-hmm. There is a day that your tongue is not working, you know, and it's unfortunate if it's on a show like ours because everybody's tongue works really well on that show. And it's probably happened probably one or two times, but it's not the person or their learning ability. It's just that day that an actor has when it's like, man, I can't get it. I can't.
It's remember that German language.
I remember an episode in the first season where I had three things to say, and it became the biggest thing. It was Alex Graves directing, and he was over it, but I was like, it doesn't make sense to me. I can't say this. And he was like on to 10 other things, and I was like, excuse me, I'm going to go talk to Alex. I just really need to. And they're like, Alex, Chris really needs to talk to you. And I was like, Alex, when I stand to the left, is it that? That's when I say it? And he's like, yes, Chris. What? It's like, just wanted to get it right. It's weird. We do. It's like such high stakes so that when the cameras are on, we do it very efficiently. Sure. So if someone does it, but people aren't used to also, sometimes, you don't always come on a set that's as welcoming as ours, but there's also big time people that we have as guest stars. Like Chris Messina's amazing. He's from theater as well. I knew him back in the day. but it's just an amazing group of people coming in, and they bring high quality work. And so even if we were jerks, which we're not, you can't deny talent, you know?
Yeah. I love to seeing it, and it looks so flawless and effortless when everybody's in, and it just kind of seems to mesh so well. It's nice to hear that.
Because setting that bar that high, that certainly shows, because you can see it on the screen when you're watching.
Yeah,
and I'm sure Aaron gave some pep talk at the beginning of the first season that was like, hey, everybody expects us to be awesome, so let's do it.
Yeah. Like, that was like his pep talk.
He's like, just do your job, and we're going to be great, because I hired awesome people.
Yeah.
And,
no pressure.
Can I ask a question? Which character is most like Aaron?
Oh, I think all of us are kind of like Aaron.
There's not one that
you
go.
Yeah, no, I think, as you get to know Aaron, as much as you get to know him, you see, oh, that seems like Aaron a little bit. And then, but how can you not when you're the sole writer of the show?
Is he on set?
Every single day.
Wow.
It's pretty remarkable that a person can be on the set every day at the beginning of he's at least at the directing of every rehearsal. And then he's also writing the next, one, two, three, four episodes.
Yeah.
So we always applaud him for that. I mean, he beats himself up, but that's, that's what you get for being brilliant.
Should.
Exactly.
That's what you get for being so good at your job.
I know.
Feel bad.
Do it better next time.
Yeah. No, but he's always there, and it's always supportive. There's never been a threat or a negative thing, and it's weird now that I'm saying it. Yeah, it's always super supportive.
Mm-hmm. Well, who wants to work in that?
I mean, I'm sure there. I mean, I don't know. I'm lucky. I'm blessed to have been on shows where it's always been awesome and supportive. Mm-hmm. But I've definitely heard stories where it's like you go on set and someone's a diva or someone's, and like, luckily nothing I've been on have been like that. Everybody's just been happy to be working on it. Yeah, no, let's knock for that.
Yeah,
his next show, he was the diva.
Well, did Aaron send you his headshot before everything started so you could look and know?
That's so funny. Did you know that story?
He
didn't send it. Someone, as a joke, in our very first gift bag, put his headshot in there with like an ACN hat and something, and put his headshot. And as he opened and said, we got to... who did this? It was very funny. It was very somebody. It's on someone's fridge. I think it's on Margaret's fridge. Maybe.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
that's funny. Yeah, I had heard it. Like it was that it was a joke that they had put it in there and was like, you need to look at this every time you're reading the script and know this is what you're working toward. Like,
are you okay with it?
That's funny. But even Chris Messina's character tonight, Reese, he's always kind of the bad guy. And hearing his little monologue was really funny.
Oh my
and
God,
I loved
that was hilarious.
I loved it. It was probably one of my favorite parts tonight when Charlie went to him and was begging him to convince, you know, to accept his resignation. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. And he agrees and says, yes, I think we absolutely should. We should write the check and move on with it. He's like, okay, well, why don't you? Because my mom said I can't.
My mom won't let me.
That's it, right
there.
And then he goes
off into this tangent. She wants grandkids. She asked me if I was gay and all of these things. And just like him mumbling and rambling about it, I just thought was really funny and a little bit vulnerable to his character that we really don't see. And I liked that. And I liked that Rebecca was there to listen in and get paid for that conversation, for it, too. Yeah. She was pretty funny tonight, too.
She's pretty great, yeah.
I love Marcia Gay.
She's pretty great.
Fantastic.
She seems like she's a lot of fun. I mean, I don't want to...
Literally everybody is so relaxed. You walk in the makeup trailer and everybody's so relaxed. Everybody's just having fun. We all joke. Everybody's connected. Like, Constance is amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Taylor, I mean, literally amazing. Like, it sounds like I'm like full of the show, but like, I get mad at the show too, guys. but the people you can't say a bad thing about anybody who works on that show. You can, but you'd be a liar.
So do you guys prank each other at all? Any kind of thing like that? It doesn't seem like a show where pranks are very popular.
No, we don't prank, but what we do have is I lead the freestyle rap group.
Really?
Dev is a huge participant.
Nice.
We try to get... Adina does not do that because she's the only adult on set. So on days when like Jeff's doing his whole broadcast, we don't necessarily have to be in the background those days.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll go outside. We had a pull-up contest first season.
Nice.
Plank contest. Thomas Matthews won, which surprised us all. We were like, and he's like, I do yoga. And we were like, don't do that. But yeah, we just have so much fun. And it seems like we don't have a good gag reel because people don't mess up.
Right.
Yeah, it's like first and second season's gag reel is probably together.
Pretty boring, huh?
About a minute and a half long because, you know, nobody really messes up.
Because you don't want to be the one
because
who does,
you don't
right?
want to. Yeah, not because we're awesome, but because we're scared. No.
I saw that headshot.
Yeah, you have the headshot next to you. I dare you to mess up.
Not gonna happen.
Go ahead.
No, but I mean, I think it speaks to just the professionalism of everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't think we do prank though.
No, I don't know.
But I'd love to hear the freestyle.
Are you gonna give us a little taste of some freestyle?
You know what I've been told about on freestyle is that it's too crass. So I don't want to do that to AfterBuzz TV.
Okay.
I don't think you want me to do that to you. My rap nickname is Sweaty Butcher, so I don't think you're ready for that.
We'll put him in the confessional.
Before you leave, we're going to get a little snippet.
Oh, goodness gracious.
It's red velvet. You can do anything you want in
that room.
We'll see.
I'm getting the vapors.
So what about these control issues with Mackenzie and her Wikipedia page?
Well, I love, oh my God. Yeah, Mackenzie, I mean... The whole thing that Dev says to her about the, you know, it's funny. What was his line? It's how funny it is, the things people try to control when they don't have any control.
Yes. It's just, I wasn't listening to you. Here's another one of those
things. Change my Wikipedia page.
I think it's beautiful, though, because she feels like everything's so out of control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's like, this is a simple thing.
It should be able to be easy fix.
It's easy.
Yeah, it's an email.
But isn't that great? I didn't know that about Wikipedia. You can't even get first-hand sources?
No.
What?
That's, you know, yeah. I think that was in there for a reason.
Of course. I'm sure it was.
As everything is, that's in there for a reason.
The Wikipedia page. Yeah. Basically, that was the underlying
thing. Aaron has had a few things to say about Wikipedia and other shows in the past, I do recall. So
I mean,
that's pretty funny.
I can't disagree with whatever his opinions might be. I mean, it's weird. You can't put your own information. Yeah. Like, I know better than anyone what I've done.
Mm. Right.
Oh, but you should tell me. You should tell me more about Chris Chalk.
Right.
That's interesting. No, that's funny. But the way that she harps on it, and she's definitely going through a lot. And poor Neil. He always gets he always gets bullied all the time. It's either Sampan or Neil, get in here. He's so good at handling it, though, isn't he?
But he's handling everybody else's insecurities about whatever. Give the man a break.
He's probably the strongest person in the room because he handles everybody else's stuff.
Absolutely, so funny.
I love when he has his death. Is there any way I can get out of here? Can I just leave now?
No. Okay.
No. They never let him off. They never give him a break.
No.
I feel bad for him. I do. I feel bad for him. But Sloane's worse because she's the nut brain.
Neurotic about it.
Yeah. So... I just can't. I'm sorry. I'm going back to it. I can't believe that that's the way she decided she should save Will.
Tell me what you mean.
Well, when
she talks about Genoa.
Taylor
about
starts, yeah, exactly. When,
during the election coverage.
I'm just going, oh, my God. She's,
I'm going to defend him.
Because, you know, her character is so bright and so stupid at the same time. And it's like, how do you write those two things? And that's, I just think it's great. Wonderfully textured, so...
And then the engineer and a conductor and a gay guy.
Oh my gosh, that was so good. That was so good. She's like, I'm so going to prove my worth on this show today.
I'm going to own you out there.
Yeah. And then she's like, there's a gay guy in the Klan. No.
Or his dad was in the Klan.
Yeah, or his dad was in the Klan. She's like, no. No.
Wait.
That's not it.
Wait, so who was the gay guy and the conductor? Elliot? No.
Nothing?
No.
What were you saying, Taylor? Yeah.
That was great.
Nothing.
Do you guys do table reads?
Or
do
oh, yeah.
You do?
Yeah, it's okay. The best.
So is that where you get to have fun with it? And just because is that the first time you get them when you do the table read? Or
no, we usually get them before. Sometimes it's only like 24 hours before, okay. But we get a version of before. And sometimes he edits it and we get a newer version on that table read day. Most of the table reads, I mean, all the table reads are awesome because they introduce the new people. We celebrate people, welcome people. And again, it's, you know, they lead a really nice ship. And, but sometimes what he'll do, because, you know, it's underscore, I mean, like the music is pretty darn good in the show, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when he has his idea of a song he wants to play, it'll play. He'll be like, he'll stop. It's really cool. It seems really dramatic, but it really works most of the time. And he'll just like, this is what's going to play under this. So I want you to listen to this first, just to get the mood.
Yeah.
And then we'll go.
Right.
And he'll play
the tone.
And we'll all listen.
It gives you a direction where you're headed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so good. I think it's so fun. Yeah. I like our table reads. I like that they are our table reads.
Yeah, you know, you don't always
they're
get
on
those.
Always table reads, and it helps him a lot. And then HBO gets to hear it, and you know, so then begins the episode. And then we know there's another episode too.
So how long before after the table read? I mean, you shooting the next day,
or sometimes?
Wow,
yeah, sometimes the next day. Yeah.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an organized chip.
So yeah, but not a lot of time for rewriting if that, you know, because you hear it.
I don't know what that conversation is. You know, that's a Aaron and first AD and director conversation, but I'm sure they know what he might want. But he doesn't, I mean, it's not a lot of rewrites.
Right.
We get it pretty much done. Pretty much done. And if there's something, you know, different or new, we get enough time with it, you know. I think that when what's her name? The lady who's calling the races, I think that was a closer race than he realized. Like, obviously, we know the news. But then, and he was like, I didn't mean to get one that was so close, you know? Like, that they shouldn't have called, you know? So, like, but that, and that soup, that rarely ever happens that, you know, the facts are that close. But, you know, he pretty much does all the work so that then we can do our job, which is kind of great. It's kind of more than kind of great.
That is great. So I like how Charlie's running up and down the newsroom with this sanitation application and the test that you take to work for the sanitation department. If anybody, the first person to mess up, that's where you're going.
But so far, we're good.
Yep. So far, so good. And there is that little mess up that you just mentioned, but luckily they didn't have to retract
they just kinda,
it.
They just move it to the side. Move to the side. Nobody wants to work in sanitation if they have a journalism degree.
Absolutely not. And then we find out that there's a new lawsuit that Jerry Dantana is throwing out. The new $20 million lawsuit for a bad reference that Don gave him for a job at Kickstarter.
Yeah. All because he used the word sociopath.
That is very calculated, and I think it's brilliant on Jerry Dantana's part. He knows he's never going to get another credible job ever, so he's got to get money somehow.
Really, it's a smart thing to do, and you know,
he will in sanitation though. He'll get it.
Yeah, he can, you know, Charlie has the application.
So,
I think you know he knows Don Kiefer's temper, and so you do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take a second to celebrate Thomas Sadowski.
Okay.
Love him.
He's great.
Literally one of my favorite people on earth, and I love him on the show.
Oh, wow.
I'm just saying it.
Oh, go ahead.
You gave me a microphone. I can say what I want to say. It's the same trickle-down effect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He is so excited to come to work. He is so excited to be at work. We have dinner and game nights at his house.
Really?
You know? No, we hang out as a cast. We're like a family. One of our ADs hosted a birthday. Him
Don
and Jeff
hosting
came.
A game night.
Him and his wife, they're just like the nicest people ever.
Wow.
Awesome. And, you know, so I celebrate my friends.
Well, that's amazing. Well, it's funny is last season, you know, he's really kind of the bad guy. He was so mean to Maggie just like the way that that whole thing went out. And I know we used to talk about it last season a lot, how it's like, oh, you know, it's always like Maggie and Jim. Like, why is Don such, you know, why is he that
why
way?
Does Don want his girlfriend to be loyal? What is he thinking?
What does he mean about it, though?
What does he mean about his girlfriend flirting with another guy? Stupid Don.
Maybe if he paid attention to her, she wouldn't. How about that?
Oh, wow. Wow. Holy smokes.
It got pretty heated last season about that. So, but what's funny is that this season you find out why. Like, why he was that way and this whole other layer to his character, which I thought, and the way that he actually portrays it and all that is amazing. Because we all, like, found ourselves, like, changing our opinions and really growing to like him and seeing this different side.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so great just on his part and the way that he does it. Because it's very rare that you can go to really disliking someone and then just within one season changing your opinion.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great.
I think that's being handled really well. I mean, it's the same thing I think you said earlier. We're seeing so many different layers to each of these characters. Mm-hmm. And this episode alone. Sorry, you said that. You didn't say that.
Whatever.
You said that
good job, John.
Maggie's justified in cheating.
I
that's what I think I heard you say.
I think we could play the tape back.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what you said.
No, I think he didn't have to be so mean to make her think she wanted to cheat. How about that?
Okay.
All right. I think this is where we start checking out. I think.
I know. Right? The floor is yours, Chris.
Ah, yes. Now my new job.
Oh my gosh! So, what else do we have going on in this episode?
You didn't mention liquid sex at all. We talked about
Marcia because I thought we were going to get to our Sorkinisms, and that was one of mine. Oh. So. She's Marcia Gay. She's liquid sex.
This is me who hasn't been on this panel before and didn't know there were Sorkinisms. Sorry.
I don't know. Do we still do that?
Yeah, okay. We still do it. Yeah, yes, great. Absolutely. So that's yours. Okay.
Well, no, I have another one that I like, which was Don's, which is you are a member of a godless, soulless race of extortionists.
Oh, my God. That speaking was of a my lawyer, favorite of the show.
Speaking of liquid sex, yeah.
So and I like how she says, that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. That, and my last one, which we've already talked about, is you're paying me for this listening to this conversation.
Also, that's fair would actually not trigger a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Because he didn't use the word sociopath. Just saying.
Okay.
If he'd used that in a job reference, he would have gotten away with it.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a Sorkinism?
I do. I said mine before already. I said just like be less desperate for female friends.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny. And then my mom said I can't.
That's my favorite.
My mom said I can't.
How to encapsulate a character in one line? My mom said I can't.
Yeah. Because he's like this, tough executive that, you know, really. And then he's just like, well, my mom says I can't. And it's just great. I thought it was funny.
End of conversation.
Yep.
That's
all it.
It is. That's
what's yours?
Thing. I didn't know,
but I had one.
Yeah, see.
It's my first time. Just say my mom said I can't.
Now under the bus.
Do what I did and say me too, what you said.
People have been incarcerated for smaller mistakes.
There you go.
That's it.
There you go.
Just like that.
Perfect. Well, tell us more about you. What do you have coming up next?
Me. I love talking about me. This is my favorite topic. Best thing that's happening right now, 12 Years a Slave, October 18th. It's been really well received out everywhere at the film festivals. It is, my manager and I, we saw it and we couldn't even speak afterwards.
Really?
Because, not only because it's heavy, but because it's brilliant. Because it talks about something that we don't talk about in our country right now, which is, you know, race and slavery. We know it's like, that happened.
Can we talk about something else? Yeah,
exactly. That's what it seems like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there are movies that either have to make it a joke or a musical, but like, this is like the most honest portrayal of something that I've seen, especially slavery. And we watched it and it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's, you know, I know we use that word a lot, but it really is like the scope of it, the work in it, and everybody did it, you know, for love.
Mm-hmm.
And Hans Zimmer did it for pennies, the music for pennies, you know what I mean? And it's like, we all did it for pennies. But the payoff, like when we sat there and watched it, was it was just a breathtaking experience. It took us so long to actually be able to discuss it, you know, we walked and we walked and we both, you know, tears in our eyes, right. Both weeping during the whole thing, which is, you know, not to deter you from seeing it. It's like a catharsis. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
it would have to be.
Yeah.
But you obviously felt something when you read the script. That's obviously why.
Of course, the script is brilliant.
Going from where you were when you first read it and you had that experience.
Yeah.
And then when you saw that experience, just talk to me about how different that was or how much more compelling it was or interesting, because one thing is to read it and have an experience when you read it. It's another thing to see it and be there. Like
when you read it as an actor, you're directing it, right? You're directing in your brain. But then when Steve McQueen directs it and you watch it, you go, oh. And even – that's another one, though. That's another one. First day we had this beautiful dinner – or my first day on set. Mm-hmm. I think they were on like day 20 of 35. Like they shot it so fast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was filmed very, very fast. Jeez. And again, but when you get good people to do the job, like, I mean, look at that cast, you know, me and those other guys.
And exactly. That's all we know.
No, seriously, it's like such a cast of great workers. And you'll see these – I'm telling you, you're going to see these people do things that you're going to a little bit be like, ugh. Mm-hmm. But they're so good and so committed, and it's because Steve ran such a comfortable and open set, mm-hmm. and honest and loving and generous set, so we felt comfortable going where we had to go, mm-hmm. to talk about something nobody wants to talk about, you know what I mean? And that is to speak to Steve McQueen's genius. I love my friends.
As you should. Can you tell us a little bit about your character?
Yes, Clemens Ray. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I can tell you. I mean, he is not supposed to be where he's at. He gets captured unjustifiably, mm-hmm. and as does our lead.
Right.
And they are on their journey together, you know. Mm-hmm. The movie, I try to, when people talk about it, it's split up into so many parts. I mean, you've seen the cast list. It's gigantic. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, if it might be in 96 pieces. I don't know. mm-hmm. And so I'd say for the first 18 we deal with, you know, if you've seen the trailer, I think my line to him is, you know, keep your head down. You know, that's what mm-hmm. I'm trying to lead him towards living, you know, making this slavery thing livable. You know, don't let anybody know you're smart and that you can read, because you'll get killed. Because you know that's the way it was, which is not good.
Yeah.
Now we're all depressed. Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, one of the things that I was actually talking to a friend about this morning. She said, you know, all people are saying is just close all the nominations. It's over. Yeah. It's done. This is the movie. And you know, the struggle, she and I are both sort of tender-hearted people, and the wrongful imprisonment or, you know, innocent man wrongly accused, that kind of movie is one that I really
and
all the others. And so she says to me, she goes, I know this is a movie we would never see, but we have to go see it. And I was like, okay, we're gonna do it.
It's true, you know. Yeah. This is they're very different things, but like Fruitvale Station, my mother's like, I don't want to see that because it's bad. I'm like, no, we need to see these things that happened in real life so that we can keep them from happening.
Yeah.
And this conversation on slavery, I think everybody needs to see it because it happened in real life and it still affects every single thing we do today, even though we pretend it doesn't, you know. And what I guess this entire company, this cast from top to bottom, this crew has created, you know, maybe a dialogue that, you know.
Well, even Aaron was talking about that in the last episode? Was it Red Team or was it the previous episode prior to that, I should say?
Tell me.
Well, because Max talking to Dawn in the bar, and she's talking about wounds, sins that you commit that you can't undo, and she's talking about slavery 300 years, and we still haven't dealt with it.
Yeah, and, you know, and I'm excited. I mean, and that's probably the thing I'm most excited about, because it means it's more than a movie. It's more than a TV show. It's more than a gig. It's like an experience. It's like something that you can look back on and go, oh, this is important. You know, I love my job. My job is my favorite thing. I love it. There's probably not a person on earth that likes acting more than I do. And this is beyond that. You know, this is, you know, people who don't like movies will like this movie. People who don't like acting will like this movie because it's just important, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when is it coming out again?
October 18th.
Where? Everywhere, right?
Nationwide.
Nationwide.
It's a wide release, right?
Yeah.
Nationwide.
Just wanted to get that out there again.
Yeah. October 18th, 12 Years a Slave. I hope that's the camera I'm supposed to look at.
You're going to get
it. Anyway.
We got a lot of them.
If people want to find you anywhere, do you have a Tumblr page?
I do not. I have a Tumblr page. I don't use my Tumblr page.
No, just your Twitter?
It's kind of, yeah, Twitter is the best place to find me because I kind of stopped doing social network. I'm going to tell you why.
Oh, please.
I was doing the Facebook.com, right?
Yeah.
And I quit it once. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm done with the Facebook.com because some rando cousin, somebody's like, I know Victor who knows Sarah who knows Elizabeth, and I'm your cousin. Times are hard over here in Germany. What? Know you. And so I was like, oh, I'm gonna quit the Facebook. My mom said, come back to the Facebook because you don't call enough, and that's how I know it's going on. That's a lie. I'm on it every day. I know you making me feel
bad. I didn't say anything.
And then it's similar things just happen, and also it's just a lot to keep up with.
Yeah.
I mean,
and so
is it pretty
much your Twitter handle is?
I stick to the Twitter Chalk Chris. Everything is Chalk Chris. I do Instagram. Ooh. It's my name is Chalk Chris. Nice. No, my name is Chris Chalk.
Yeah.
And I have an awesome Instagram because I take pictures. My name is Chris Chalk. I'm gonna let her write that down.
Yeah.
I have a very fancy pants camera. It's not. I don't do that iPhone only stuff.
Oh.
I use my fancy pants camera and take fancy pants pictures.
Very nice. Right.
But then sometimes I do the boring stuff too. Like, look, a cup. And it's like,
do you Instagram your food? Is that what you do? Are you one of those?
Perfect.
Only if I cook something awesome because I cook a lot too. I bake.
Oh,
I cook.
Very nice.
And so sometimes I won't give you the recipe. Some people are generous and give out recipes. I'm not giving you a recipe. You know how hard I worked on that recipe.
I don't give my recipe.
When I write the book, you can have the recipe. When you pay.
I do give out my recipes all the time.
I don't do it.
TamaraCentral.com. You can find them all right there.
Is it really? TamaraCentral.com?
Yes.
That's a heck of a plug.
It is.
You know where you can find me? TamaraCentral.com.
You can
find me on TamaraCentral.com.
I want to talk Jets real quick. We got played out here.
He actually tweeted it.
Yeah.
Oh, Jets. Go Jets.
Yeah. What do you want to say about the Jets? Come on.
I think the Jets, you know, I'm a little.
For how long have you been a fan?
I've been a fan of the Jets since Curtis Martin went to the Jets.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm a huge Curtis Martin fan because he played the game the way I like to do my job. It's like he respects it. Mm-hmm. He does it. He's not about frills and, you know, but he constantly performs. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I love him because he's not, you know, in the end zone, signing footballs.
Barry Sanders school. Nice.
You know, do your job.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Do your job.
Act like you've been there.
Act like you've been there. And so I've been his fan, and now it's really hard to stick with the Jets because they're the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, and Curtis is not there.
Curtis isn't there. Yeah. Well, and no one's there.
Well, but, so how are you feeling as a fan these days?
I'll tell you. Wait, you still don't know what happened in the game.
No,
right?
I don't.
So I can't tell you how I feel as a fan. But I'm feeling okay.
Damn.
But you should watch the whole game.
Of course I will.
It doesn't happen until the end of the game.
All right, I'll watch the game.
But I'm a big
whatever it is that happens.
Yeah. But my West Coast team, now that I live on the West Coast, are the 49ers.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah, that's my West Coast. I only
have
one
team.
My West Coast team.
Yeah, that's our West Coast team.
49ers.
All right.
From San Francisco. So there we go. All right, so Chalk Chris at
Chalk
Twitter.
Chris on Twitter. And my name is Chris Chalk
on Instagram.
And on one of those, eventually I'll have a webpage, but I'll tell you what it is.
And October 18th.
October 18th. 12 Years a Slave.
Make sure you see it.
Watch Newsroom next week.
There you go.
Thank you so much for joining us and hanging out. It's
awesome.
Been
thank
an
you,
amazing pleasure to have
TV.
You.
Thank you.
So Newsroom got a season 3, so congratulations
on that.
Is that
official?
It's official. I heard it was official. Yeah,
they don't
official.
Even tell you?
I mean, be careful now.
Man.
Until Aaron Sorkin says it, it's not
okay.
Official.
Gotcha.
Well, he told me.
You need a second. You need a second source.
It's okay
on that
Maggie cheated.
Okay. You're not gonna let me let that one.
Terrible.
Okay. Yeah. That's not what I meant. No. Anyway, thank you guys so much.
She was quoted out of context.
I was totally quoted out of context. It's a Genoa thing. Totally.
Excellent.
Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Make sure to join us for next week. It's the season finale. Next week.
Oh, good gracious.
Yes. We're coming back.
No matter what.
Yes, and
even
we'll
if
be
you
back.
Don't want us.
And from what I
Chris
heard,
is coming because
yeah,
he's
this
he's
is my new job.
Over.
Yeah, yeah. He's
over this
over.
In fact, just keep watching. I'll be here the next whatever the next show is. I'm here.
And make sure to follow us on AfterBuzz on Twitter at AfterBuzzTV. Go to iTunes, please download the podcast. It's free. Rate and comment. We love to hear what you guys think about the show. And you can always follow me on Twitter at Kelly with an IE 079.
Yeah, I can't follow me anywhere, so don't bother trying.
We need to get him on social media so you can follow after
my TV. No, we don't. I'm at Tamara Berg, TamaraBerg on Twitter, and my website is what? TamaraCentral.com.
And there are recipes. It's also where you can find your latest information about me.
Exactly. Yes, you're going to have its own tab on that, on that website.
Chris Chalk News next to this carrot cake recipe.
We'll see you guys next week for the season finale of Newsroom.
See you next week.
Bye.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Bye. See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.